Welcome to the only podcast for piano teachers just starting out, Piano Teacher Primer. My name is Angela Toon. Keep listening for the prime pro tips you can use with your own students right away. Welcome to the Piano Teacher Primer podcast. I have as a guest, Andrea Miller. Yes, I'm going to read a little bio, but say hi.
Hi, thank you for having me, Angela. This is fun.
Thank you so much. We've gone back and forth and phone tagged a little bit. So I'm so happy that we've made it work today. This is a good day. So Andrea Miller, piano teacher and entrepreneur behind Music Studio Startup Podcast. So fellow podcaster, love it. And mastermind. And she enjoys helping music teachers understand the money side of their studios. So this is one of the main reasons why I wanted to have her on. And empowering them to build financially sustainable studios and careers. And I'm hoping that beginning teachers, if they're like nervous about the business side of teaching, that you can reassure and also give some tools and help beginning teachers know that it's not a big deal and it's totally fine. And there's different levels you can choose. And so welcome. Anything else you want to say by way of introduction?
No, that's a great introduction. And yeah, I love talking to beginner piano teachers because they're at the beginning. So, you know, it's a clean slate. You can do whatever you want. You can set up your studio in a sustainable way right from the beginning rather than having to, like, you've got this whole machine that's already moving behind you and you have to try to change things. It's much harder later. So the sooner you start this stuff, the better. And it's all very doable. Takes some thought and intentionality, but it's very doable.
Very doable. Love it so much. So how did you get started teaching? What is your beginning stages like?
Yeah, kind of on accident, like so many of us do, right? I started in high school because I had been taking piano lessons for, I don't know, 8 years or something. And one of my mom's friends knew that I had was kind of a serious piano student. And she said, hey, would your daughter teach my daughter? And so I talked to my piano teacher and said, can I do this? And she said, sure, I think you could do that. So that's how I started.
How old were you then?
I was 15.
And you were 15 years old. Yeah. I love it. That's perfect.
So one kid in my mom's, her parents' living room. And I continued to teach out of their living room all the way through college. And then opened a multi-teacher studio. I went to school for piano performance and also entrepreneurship.
Cool. Is that a double major?
Yeah. So cool. I was all in the business school and all in the music department. And
that sounds like a lot.
It was a lot.
I got a performance degree as well. And you like, oh, I have to practice for 3 hours and do homework. Got it.
Yes, it was a lot. I don't think I realized till after I finished. And I was driving back past, so I live now 2 miles away from where I went to school. And I was driving past the campus a year after I graduated or something. And the like feeling just like washed over me of the stress that I felt when I was in school, which is so much workload and everything. And I was like, oh, I didn't realize I felt that every day while I was in school trying to juggle all those classes and practicing and ensembles and everything.
And I thought when I graduated that it would immediately be like, oh, really? But it was kind of still there. I was still like, finals.
Yeah. But I was excited to get into the real world and kind of like start, you know, working towards some of the things I wanted to do. So right after I graduated, I started a multi-teacher studio and I ran that for several years. And then I got married and wasn't part of my plan. So that kind of changed some things. And my husband had a job. He was in grad school when we got married, but he had a job that just places you somewhere after you graduate. So 4 years into running my multi-teacher studio, we found out we'd be moving to the DC area. So we made that move. I decided to do just more private teaching there rather than start a new multi-teacher studio because I didn't know how long we'd be there for. And then we ended up being there about 5.5 years and then moved back to St. Louis. And I passed off my studio to one of the teachers. And now I'm back in the same neighborhood. So I came back and kind of like rejiggered some things and have remained a private teacher here, And I had started music studio startup in the process of all of that and had just kind of shifted some things around. So still teaching privately a handful of students, doing a lot of work with music teachers. And then I'm also the director of operations for a piano retailer as well. So,
oh, cool. I
keep a few things going on.
For selling pianos?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, awesome.
So I work with them. A company that has piano galleries in 1, 2, 3, 5 states.
Oh.
And I work with all the remote teams.
Oh, dang.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so awesome. I spend a lot of time on Zoom.
Yeah, you're comfortable here. More than
and
me.
Most my private students right now are also Zoom lessons because they are ones who stayed with me from Maryland when we moved back to St. Louis. And they've just been with me for a long time. So.
Oh, that's awesome. And yeah. then music studio startup. Yeah. So when did you start your podcast? Where were you at in there?
Yeah, I started blogging in 2016 and the podcast in 2018. Well, I reserved the domain name in 2016 and perfectionism kept me back for a long, long, long time. And then in 2018, I started the podcast. And I've had some breaks and pauses in there with other startup work I was doing because I always have had a series of other projects going on. So for a while I was working with a coffee shop and gelato shop, managing that and getting systems in place. And then I worked with a couple other startups off and on. And then we moved and had 3 kids in 4 years. So there's been a few like long pauses with the podcast.
Yes. Congratulations. Yeah. How old are your kids?
Four, two, and 5 months today.
Oh, 5 months. Oh, you got a baby. Oh, congratulations.
Thanks.
Oh, I love the babies. And remember the no sleep very well.
Yeah. Yep.
Dang. And then music studio startup. Is that what you call your mastermind group? And you have got some online courses.
Yes.
And
yes.
Stuff too. Describe some of your other projects that you've been
working. Yeah. So with Music Studio Startup, my goal is really helping teachers, you read in my bio, understand the financial side of their studios and build studios that can sustain them as a career, not just like, oh, this is a great college job or it works for 3 years, but then you need to get a real air quotes job so you can have health insurance. Like, you can make a living as a music teacher. And I just want teachers to know how to do that. It just kills me that people get to their 50s and realize they've never saved for retirement. And so while they had fun and had a fulfilling role, you know, in students' lives, they can't afford to retire ever. And it just, you know, puts them in a bind. So everything I do is to that end. How do I help teachers build sustainable careers and then also be able to retire and things like that? So the first course I put together was Business Building 101. And that is like the nuts and bolts. It guides you through every decision you need to make to set up your studio. So it's not like excessive marketing your studio or any of that. It's just making those foundational decisions that create a studio that's worth marketing. Because if you build your whole studio on numbers that don't support you, you know, through those other phases of life, then I just think you're doing yourself a disservice and I don't want that to happen. So that's what the Business Building 101 course is. And then I realized a lot of teachers were going into like multi-teacher studios. You know, they had a thriving private studio and wanted to take a new step. I say a new step, not the next step, because I don't think multi-teacher studio is the next step for every teacher. So I'm really careful about that. But some decide to take that route. And the finances change a little. They get a little more complicated. You've got, just so much more labor cost with the teachers that you employ. And you've got overhead with the studio space rent and things like that. And it's just a little bit more. So I put together the finance course that's really to help get to that point, understanding how the different financial statements work, how to read them, how to glean information from them, and then troubleshoot your own studio. So if you're like, I have this studio that I've been running for 10 years and my teachers are doing well, but I'm not making a living from it, how do I fix that? And that's what the finance course does. And also for a teacher who's maybe wanting to needs to get a loan because they need to rehab a space or something, just be able to speak the language of your banker and present a business plan or something that's respectable. So wow, that's what the finance course is.
So awesome. And then your double major. That's because I think a lot of pianists and piano teachers are more on the creative and less on the business side and less knowledgeable or less experience. And I mean, especially if you start teaching when you're 15, you know, yeah. Some of us have never had a real job, you know. I was like a server at a restaurant through college. That's like the closest, you know, I've never had a corporate job.
That's your only W-2, yeah.
Or anything like that. And so having a resource like you with all your experience and the number, and even just numbers, like numbers don't like stick in my brain, you know, just having working the numbers, I think is a real gift and a skill that we could all benefit from.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't sell yourself short there either, because I think it's, you know, it's a not yet thing. Mm-hmm. Just like your student who comes for their first lesson, like, they're not playing Chopin, but it's not that they can't or don't, you know, it's not yet. They need to build some skills along the way. And I think with the numbers, it's just exposing yourself to them over and over and over and over and over again. Like you've exposed yourself to this E major scale and you can play it in your sleep because you've seen it so many times. I would encourage any teacher to not have that limiting belief that I'm not a numbers person or something, because I really mm-hmm. think you can be. It might not be the thing you do on a Friday night, like pop open a spreadsheet. I mean, I do that, but it doesn't mean you have to. But you can get familiar with it. And when it's practical and has a, you know, impact in your business, then it really comes to life, I think, then.
That's so true. That's so cool. And is your website, how can people find this? Musicstudiostartup.com.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, musicstudiostartup.com. And those are all under the courses.
Awesome. Yeah. I will link all of that. Fantastic. Oh, and your mastermind, describe.
Oh, yeah. My mastermind is about helping people get stuff done. So how many times have you signed up for a course and then like not really completed it? And also, I don't want that for teachers. So the mastermind is like part group coaching, part accountability. I say that word cautiously because it's the most supportive, encouraging group of teachers you can imagine. This is not a harsh, you didn't do tactic A, shame on you. It is not that at all. So the mastermind, it's based on a system I use for setting goals and tracking goals and then weekly check-ins with the group. Again, super supportive. Like if we notice someone was going to record a video and it's been on hanging out on their list for 3 weeks and they haven't gotten done, and we'll say, hey, what's stopping you? How can we get over this hump that's keeping you from getting this done? But it's all in support of teachers accomplishing whatever their next goal is and consistently getting things done to avoid burnout and the loneliness of being an independent teacher and all of those things. So it's very customized to each teacher. They're setting their own goals, but then we're all together following through.
That sounds way cool. That sounds fun. And it's sometimes we put things on our to-do list and then we're like, it just stays there on the to-do list and that's all. So having a set time and like, I really do want to do this. And then sometimes all the accountability you need is to tell somebody that you're going to do it by this date.
Mm-hmm. And I check in myself on Mondays in this group. And I can tell you those Monday mornings, I'm super productive. And there's like a frantic rush to get the things done from my list that I said I was going to get done because I don't want to go in and say I didn't finish this thing. So yeah, it's super helpful, even for me. And
Yeah, you've provided something that you appreciate yourself.
Yes.
That's fantastic. What fun things. Congratulations. Thanks. I love that. Okay, let's head into your top three tips for beginning teachers. Mm-hmm. And she's going to go into some more details on this. So take it away. Number one.
Okay, so my first tip is to start getting in touch with your personal values and studio values or values as a teacher. And I say start because especially if you're a young new teacher, you might not have a clear sense of this right away. So you're starting the process. And yeah, just think about what's important to you. I do have a mini course on vision and values to kind of help go through this. That one's free. It's on my website.
Awesome.
But it's a process. And so one of the exercises I have people do is go through a list of like adjectives and decide this one resonates with me, this one doesn't, just to start putting language behind what's important to you. And I see that influencing every decision a teacher has to make. Like one teacher might value flexibility, so they want a really open policy. Students can reschedule, they can cancel, whatever. That's great. Another teacher might value consistency and want that regular lesson every week, rain or shine. You know, the consistency is the highest value. Both of those are fine. I think there's a place for both teachers. I really think they're different teachers are going to resonate with different students, but that does influence how you structure your policy and other things. So I just think it's really important. You know, we get a lot of information thrown our way and someone will say, you need to set up your studio this way. Someone will say, you need to set it up this way. But behind it, they're coming with a set of assumptions, values that they value, and they might not align with yours. So it'll help you sift through anything you're hearing and just build a studio that's your studio, not someone else's.
Oh, that's so good. Because yeah, we get advice, we get great advice from all kinds of people, and they're coming from their value, which might not match your mm-hmm. own. That is a great idea. And then it helps you not feel bad about it. Like the flexibility thing, I can totally relate to that because I provide a little bit of flexibility because I realized I wanted some on my end for my kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I want to be able to change a lesson once in a while if I want to hit a soccer game once in a while.
Exactly.
You know, and so I will allow a little bit of trades. I allow makeup lessons within what spots I have available. And I think for a lot of years, I felt bad about that. So this helps you not feel bad about it because you've already set up those core values. And then I'm not trying to be some other person. This is how I really want to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And it takes some time, you know, like you realized, oh, I want that flexibility for myself. So I'm also going to give it to my students. But yeah. So yeah. You won't know it off the bat, but
I think we're leading into your second one right now.
Yes. Yes. So stress test your policy. And this really comes from, that concept, like I see it most often come up with the cancellation policies. You can give a really flexible policy, you can give a really flexible cancellation policy, but your policies and your financial model has to support that. And if I can nerd out a little bit right now.
Let's nerd out.
Nerd out. Okay.
So we've got our glasses on. Let's nerd out.
People who've worked with me know that I do a lot of spreadsheet work, and we call it spreadsheet story time when I just bust out a spreadsheet and we share some numbers. And I know there are people who might just be listening, so I'll try to describe what I'm showing on this spreadsheet too. And Angela, please interrupt if I'm going too fast or the numbers aren't making sense. So
I'll be the first to know if it's going over my head.
So for the example of a cancellation policy, sometimes teachers do great, like they run their numbers at the beginning and they say, okay, I want to earn $60,000 a year. Let's just throw that number out there. I think I'm going to have 48 lessons a year and my lesson rate is $35 for a half hour lesson. So I need 35.7 students. Let's round up to 36. So that's great. They've done the initial math for this a viable financial model. But then let's say their policy doesn't put any restrictions on cancellations. So instead of having 48 lessons a year, they're actually only teaching on average 42 per student. So then they've got 42 lessons weeks of teaching each year at the $35 lesson rate, 36 students. They're only hitting almost $53,000 in income. Even though their math at the beginning like made sense, the policy didn't support that math. So you got to rework that. And it's definitely not impossible. It just takes a little bit of foresight and planning around that. So you might say, okay, I can't actually support a $35 a lesson rate. It actually needs to be 40, or I actually need 40 students, or whatever. You know, there are different ways to hit that number. But that's just one way. I have another example here of a monthly tuition rate, because a lot of times teachers will go to a monthly rate, you know, to accommodate that. And here I see a similar thing can happen. Say you want $60,000 a year in income, you've got 12 months per year, so you need to charge, and you want to charge $150 a month. That means you need 33 students. But in actuality, all your students take the summers off, so you only have 10 months of tuition, which gets you to $52,000 a year of income instead of that 60 that you're targeting. So, you know, monthly tuition or by the lesson tuition doesn't solve this. It's, you know, having the policy that supports. So your policy might be, it's 12 months of tuition, whether you take lessons in the summer or not, it doesn't matter, but it's 12 months of tuition or a higher tuition rate throughout the year. You know, there are options. There's tons of creativity actually in business and the way you set up these policies, but that is my tip number two, is to stress test your policy to support whatever those values are. Flexibility, yeah. Consistency, all that.
Yeah, try it out. And then the good news is you can change it if you want, anytime you want.
Yes, you can. You can.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can. And in the first model, sometimes we don't realize how those little cancellations can add up. Yeah. So I used to charge a different amount per month, depending on how many lessons were in that month. Mm-hmm. And if they missed, it was a less amount. And yeah, they add up, those little cancellations. And when they're out of town, when they're sick, when it's spring break, when they're, yeah. So that's important to run the numbers and not be afraid of doing that, and to see how all of that plays out and if that's what you really want.
Mm-hmm. And I think when you've done that, it also gives teachers the conviction to uphold their policies. This goes back to the values. You know, if your policies are reflecting your values and what you decide you need to do to run a sustainable business, then you're not as swayed by, you know, Johnny's third birthday party this month or something like that. And you can be like, no, there's a reason I have this policy. It's because I need to be able to keep doing this. Otherwise I should get a job somewhere else, you know?
Maybe we could give teachers some ways of saying this, what do you say to parents when you need to enforce a policy?
Well,
I have a couple ideas if you want to
send out policies in advance is one way. Just remind them of the policies, and say, thanks for, okay, let's say it's a cancellation that someone doesn't want to pay for or something. And you can just give them a reminder. You don't have to justify it anymore than that. So just, that's so fun that Johnny gets to go to a third birthday party this month. Unfortunately, I don't have a time to make up that lesson. As per the policy, we've got 2 makeups allowed per year. We'll see you next week. Thanks.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. Or if they're asking for a refund or something, you know, it's not in my policy to do that, but I am open this day at this time if they can come. I have another friend that runs a multi-teacher studio, and they have a group lesson on like Saturday mornings for anyone that needs a makeup. So they just have kind of an open group thing. They have some games thing. They have a, I don't know exactly what the format is of it, but I know she uses that as, hey, it's not in our policy to do that. Oh, I'm so sorry that you guys are going to be out of town, but this makeup date is available. You know, so something like, it's not in my policy. Sorry, not sorry. No, just kidding. Not in my policy, but here's this other way to handle it.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. Yeah, the group makeup lesson, like predetermined makeup days, all that is,
Mm-hmm.
Great stuff.
I've also heard something like, it wouldn't be fair to the other families who pay by the month, every month, you know, oh, we're traveling all summer. Well, I've also heard it put this way with the summer thing. the tuition holds your spot for the fall.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The tuition holds your spot for the fall. If you're unable to have that hold your spot, then I've got a lot of students around the corner that are ready to take that spot. So if you want to hold your spot for the fall, then... And the other thing I've done too with policies is if there's a big, huge life event, I really do, you know, between us teachers, don't tell my families, but I have made other arrangements. Just those big life events, a divorce, you know, I had a kid hit by a car, not my kid, my student, but still you feel like they're your own. I'm like, yeah, yeah. You know, so I didn't charge them for that month when his thumb was broken from being, he was walking his bike. Oh my gosh, it's horrible. So stuff like that, you know, I make exceptions, but then I just leave that all up to my own self. I think I do say something in my policy, like emergencies do happen or something like that. So I can leave that up to my discretion.
And it can all be that, all of that is fine. It's having the financial model that supports that flexibility or that level of compassion or whatever it is. So, you know, if you only want to collect 10 months of tuition each year and let students do whatever they want for the summer and not pay, just adjust your 10 months so you can afford to do that. There's no like right or wrong on these things. What I care about as a coach at the end of the day is sustainability, and can this support you and not just your financial well-being, but also your person. And yeah, is it going to burn you out? Because sure, you could teach 60 students a week, but how long can you keep that up? And does that afford you the other opportunities in life that you want? You know, like someday you might want to have kids and you don't want to teach from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. every day or something like that. So yeah, but if you want to only collect tuition 10 months of the year, or you want people to be able to cancel once a month, go for it. You know, go for it. Just make sure your model supports it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love how you mentioned too, there's so much creativity you can do with this. It's not only by the week or only by the month. In fact, one of my other episodes, I kind of go into what I do. I do like a semester system, and there's two extra weeks. So they can miss two, same amount every month. And then there's 2 weeks, you know, and nobody minds an extra week off before Christmas.
Beautiful. Yeah.
So that really works for me to have a little bit of flexibility, but also have the same amount per month. So there's so much creativity.
Yeah. And yeah, it goes back to like, there is no one right way for each teacher, because what you value and what a good maintainable lifestyle for you is going to look different than someone in a different, you know, season of life. And that's fine.
Totally. And different seasons. Yeah. And we can change our policies depending on what season we're in. Mm-hmm. Beautiful. And I love too how you said, take the financials into account. I think sometimes also as piano teachers, we love so much the fulfillment and the musical things and the and we take into account how much do I want to teach and send, but we ignore the financial model. So that's really a good reminder for us. Should we go to tip number three?
Yeah.
Okay.
So tip number three is to prioritize building fast. And this one might be a little bit, I don't know, everyone might not agree with this one, but
yeah, but you can share what you think. Yeah.
My goal is that teachers also be able to retire at the end. So building with the end in mind. And I remember when I graduated, I think I earned $25,000 my first year out of school. And I was like, this feels like so much money, because I did buy a house that year. So I did have some grown-up expenses, which that's a whole nother podcast episode, talking about buying a house on $25,000 of income. But it just felt like so much, because I wasn't paying room college, you know, tuition and buying books and room and board. So I had much more income to spend on other things. So I actually felt like I was earning a lot, but I hadn't yet put those grown-up expenses into my budget, like retirement savings, you know, house repairs, all that kind of thing. If you want to have kids, childcare, school, music lessons for your kids, all those things hadn't gone in there yet. And I think it can actually be a disservice for teachers. You know, a lot of teachers, they've gone to grad school, they're used to being poor. And so they graduate, they've got this relatively low income, but they're very comfortable on it. And I think sometimes it makes us a little too comfortable and not prioritize growing quickly. And the implications of that, like if you zoom out to the end of the career, can be really quite huge. So I've got another spreadsheet for this one. And so here I'm showing two teachers. We've got our slow start teacher who's 25 and starting earning $25,000 a year. And then the speedy start teacher starts out earning the same $25,000 a year from age 25. Now, our slow start teacher just gradually increases their income, like $5,000 a year. I'm going to bring this out to age 30. And the speedy start teacher, they're like really accelerating it. They're maybe paying for advertising, you know, using a service like Thumbtack or something to get leads in faster, build their studio really fast. And so they pretty quickly jump to $50,000 and then $60,000 in income. Because of that higher income, the speedy start teacher is able to start saving for retirement at age 26, let's say, instead of age 30, like the slower start teacher, just because they have more income coming in. Over the course in those 5 years, the speedy start teacher is earning $75,000 more than the slow start teacher, just from this slower acceleration rate, 31% more. On top of that, the speedy start teacher has $32,000 in retirement savings at the end of those 5 years. And, oh, sorry, this is 6 years, age 25 to 30. And the slow start teacher has only $6,500. So if that teacher were to put pause on their retirement savings right there, and then zoom out to age 65, let's say they're retiring then, the future value of the slow start teacher's retirement portfolio is $65,000. And the future value of the speedy start teacher's retirement portfolio is $370,000. Just because they were able to start saving earlier. That's huge. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times we look at, I'll have a teacher say, well, I don't want to spend $100 on advertising when I get great word of mouth referrals. And that's awesome. Word of mouth is super powerful. Usually the best students come from word of mouth for sure. But if it's going to take a year to start getting referrals and you're going to get the only five a year, there's just huge incentive to accelerate that. And maybe you're not getting the best students from the paid advertising that you're doing, but you're just accelerating that income to enable you to start saving and do those things that are really going to have a huge impact on your career looking out 5, 10, 30 years. And I think there's also some judgment. Yeah, isn't it crazy? I've sensed some judgment about paying for advertising or leads for students or things like that. And I just don't think that makes any sense at all because the teacher with the, bigger retirement portfolio, I think will be pretty happy at the end and not mind that they invested even $1,000 in building their studio really fast. I can drag this out to just another model for an even slower start. This is a teacher who slowly builds their studio to 35 compared to that same speedy start teacher that just even more accelerates the retirement savings. So someone who doesn't start saving for retirement until 35, the future value of their retirement, $6,500 in retirement savings, is $46,000. And the teacher who's been saving from 26 to 35, their retirement savings will be worth $640,000.
Crazy.
Crazy numbers. And as musicians and music teachers and students, we don't see these numbers often enough, but they're compelling.
Yeah. Where do you recommend, like, because if you have a corporate job, they're going to put it in, they're going to put it in account for you. Where do you recommend, like, a private teacher setting up a retirement account.
Yeah, there are tons of options. I personally use Vanguard, but this is not an advertisement for Vanguard. It's just what I've used. And getting a Roth IRA or something there. I put $6,500 a year as the retirement savings amount, just because that's the maximum you can put into one of those accounts at the lower ages. When you get to 50 or 55, it bumps up, but that's a good target to start with, trying to save that much. And yeah, I think more important than doing like finding the best thing is to start and get in the habit of saving that and setting inside and, you know, put it in the budget as an expense. You know, don't wait for your income to feel like you have enough. Just right away, start with $5 a month, if that's what it, you know, what you can do, and get in the habit and build it up.
Yeah. Just start.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or if you move to a new area, you don't have the advantage of the word of mouth having traveled.
Exactly. Yeah.
So that would be a good time to, and then again, get creative. Like if you don't want to do a big spend of advertising, there's music teacher groups. There's a lot of ways to find students with different creative ways to do that.
So many. Yeah. Yeah. And it's not about the method. It's just like, prioritize it. Don't, like, there are costs to waiting. There are costs to waiting.
Yeah. So we think about the cost of advertising, but there's a cost to waiting. That's good.
Yeah. Cause if you spend, and this is the same argument with, you know, they say, well, I don't want a student from Thumbtack or something because they're not going to be as good, or like a long-term student. Fine. They might be a 6-month student. Okay. And especially when you're, you know, we talked about the values thing, you don't exactly know what you're all about at the beginning. So just get a lot of those 6-month students, just work them through, figure out what you like and what you don't like, and what student really lights you up and makes you enjoy teaching. There's value to that too.
And you still have that ability to say, I don't think it's a fit for me as a teacher and you as a student. So if you get a vibe from an advertising and you really are thinking it's not going to be a long-term, or somebody you really don't want to teach for whatever reason, you can still say, even though you advertised and they came, you can still say, I don't really think it's a fit, but here's my friend who teaches.
Yeah. And then you're the great friend teacher who refers students.
Yeah.
And also just a resource in your community too. Like, I know if I call Angela, she's going to say, you know, I think you'd be a great fit here, and give me a really great referral. And yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, most people don't graduate from college getting their ideal job either. Yeah. And each one of your students is like a tiny mini sliver of a job.
Yeah.
So you might have some that are not ideal at the beginning. And as you build the portion that is ideal, those other ones, they trickle away. Or you can say, you know, I'm cleaning my rosters and it's been great, but it's time to pass you on, and because I've got enough students that really fit my ideal client.
And every time I had a baby, I would cut back a little bit, and I would just say, I'm having a baby, I'm cutting back my studio. Again, here's some friends of mine that I can pass you on to. Let's see, the other thing I was gonna say with that too, the other thing is, it charging more will attract more dedicated students as well. So if you're finding you're getting a lot of not your favorite, then you might also consider raising your prices, and you might attract some more, not always, but you may attract more of your ideal student.
Yeah. Or you can be picky with times too. I've got clients who, like, they hit their income goal and they are still getting requests for lessons. And so they're just super picky about what they're willing to do. So like, I'm not going to teach you on Saturday. I can teach you at 6:30 a.m. on Tuesdays. That's my open slot. Or I can do asynchronous lessons, but it gives you like that ability, freedom to really just have higher standards.
I love it. Yeah. And it's a premier experience here. Private lessons and or group formats, whatever you choose. It's a high level, it's a high ticket item. So let's do that.
Yeah.
Well, Andrea, you are the best. Seriously, such a fun perspective to that I haven't had on the podcast yet. So I really appreciate you taking the time to come on with me and for us to remember that we are running a business and to see it as that. And we are the boss ourselves, or the CEO, and that we can, and giving us some ideas of how to run it more effectively that's going to be true to our values and then is also going to serve our people and keeping the future in mind. So, such a unique, awesome, fresh perspective today. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much, Angela. This has been really fun. Thanks for letting me nerd out. And hopefully your listeners didn't like glaze over.
Yeah. So if you're listening and you want to just check out, this will be on YouTube, and then Spotify has video. So you can check it out on video if you want to see it. But I think you described it. I think it'll make sense. So
awesome.
Thanks, Andrea.
Thank you.
Are you having as much fun with this podcast as I am? Are you getting some actionable tips? Help more beginning piano teachers find us by leaving a rating and a review. On Apple, you just scroll down to the bottom and click on the stars. And on Spotify, you click the three dots near the top and click rate show. Also visit angelatune.com for free videos, downloads, courses. Together, we'll change the world one student at a time.